ESPN College Football Podcast.
Welcome, welcome, everybody, to the ESPN College Football Podcast for Thursday, July 28, 2022. This will be our final podcast in July, which means the next time you'll hear us will be the month that the college football season actually kicks off. Adam Rittenberg here with my friend and colleague, Andrea Adelson. I'm back, Andrea, from Big Ten Media Days in Indianapolis. Was fun spending time with coaches and players and league administrators. And, you know, the thing that stood out to me most from Big Ten Media Day, we'll start there, get into Pac-12 Media Days as well a little bit later in the show. But the Big Ten, you know, had the platform and they were taking a victory lap. And it was the first time, I think, in quite some time, certainly in Kevin Warren's tenure as commissioner, Andrea, that there was just genuine optimism. It was excitement about adding UCLA and USC, excitement about the upcoming media rights deal, which is reportedly going to net the Big Ten more than $1 billion annually to spread among its members. Just the natural optimism going into the season with Michigan and Ohio State, and, you know, James Franklin's fired up at Penn State. Scott Frost thinks he has a chance at Nebraska. Kirk Ferentz defending the Big Ten West title at Iowa. So it was just a very exciting, positive tone, which really hasn't been the case in the Big Ten for a little while.
What a turnabout for Kevin Warren, who started his tenure in the middle of COVID, canceling the season, getting death threats from fans because they were so upset about the way he handled it. The outrage that came from Scott Frost at Nebraska and from Ohio State about the decisions he made regarding what they were going to do with the season. They end up changing their minds and playing, but you never really got a sense that this was Kevin Warren's league until what just happened with USC and UCLA. And the fact that you discuss this in your story, that this is something he had thought about during the interview process with the Big Ten about going west, about expanding that footprint, about the fact that the Big Ten had been very much centered on the East Coast and a little bit in the Midwest. But what was going to be that step that took this conference further? The fact that he was already thinking about that during his interview process, I think, speaks to what he brings to the table here in terms of his vision, but also his business sense. And that is something that commissioners absolutely have to have right now in the collegiate landscape. I was at ACC Media Day, and I heard Jim Phillips talking about what the collegiate athletics model represents and all of these grandiose ideas. Now, this is a big business. And the tact that Kevin Warren has taken in terms of focusing on that, I think, has allowed the Big Ten to be in a position right now where it's the Big Ten and the SEC and everybody else.
You're right, Andrea. And there were several things you said that are so interesting that I want to build on. The phrase, what he brings to the table regarding Kevin Warren, honestly was a mystery for a lot of people in the Big Ten for quite some time, even after getting past COVID and all the controversy and emotions that went into that time period, which, again, you know, there was no playbook for that. He couldn't have been prepared for that. What he could have been prepared for are some of the things that he believes are happening right now. And I thought what was so interesting was him revealing that he thought about these two schools before he even took the Big Ten job, you know, as great additions to the league from an institutional perspective, but also from a market perspective, looking at the number of Big Ten alumni there in Los Angeles, knowing the Big Ten already had a strong presence in the Midwest, obviously Chicago market, but the New York market with Rutgers and Penn State being relatively close by. He grew up in Arizona. He figured, why isn't the Big Ten looking west if it does choose to expand? Now, USC and UCLA obviously were a big part of coming to the Big Ten and expressing their interest in possibly leaving the Pac-12. But I think you're finally getting to see more of the vision of Kevin Warren. And it's something that I've asked a lot of Big Ten staff members and people around that conference for years now is, where's the value added? What does Kevin Warren bring that another commissioner candidate wouldn't have brought. And there've been a lot of blank stares back to at me or pauses. How is Kevin doing? There's often a pause. It's not, oh, he's doing great. Things are great. There's sort of this hesitancy. And while that's still there to some degree, part of that is the way he communicates, which I don't think is as direct as it could be. Certainly not as direct as Greg Sankey in the SEC. But I think there's also, he has settled in. He's delegating to people that are really good, that know college athletics. But then his value is coming out in things like the expansion. But even more so, Andrea, I think in the media rights agreement that's going to come up as far as how it's structured and which television or streaming partners are included in it. You know, one thing that Kevin told me on Tuesday, he said, this is a deal that I want people to look back on in 20 years and say, wow, look at what they did. They changed the way media rights are done in college sports. And then the other big theme that he continued to stress, which again, you know, I think is in contrast to what we heard from Jim Phillips in the ACC last week, is the fact that you have to be bold, you have to be creative, and you have to distance yourself from the bureaucracy that's held back college athletics. He talked about companies like Sears and Roebuck or Kodak that once had market share, that once were noticeable companies that basically were rendered extinct because they didn't adjust to the changing times. And he was very optimistic about being in this time period. He told me this is year two of probably a 4 to 5 year period of major disruption in college athletics. But let's look at it as a positive, as opposed to hand-wringing, oh my God, how are we going to get out of this? And we'll see if he can be one of those leaders to come out on the other side in a stronger position. But you certainly felt that a little bit more in Indianapolis. I don't know how you looked at it kind of from the outside.
I thought his comments were bold and aggressive and clearly indicated that the Big Ten is not going to take a backseat to anybody. That, look, this is one move. Potentially there are other moves down the line. And we're not going to be shy about saying that. We're just going to let everybody out there know that this is the direction we feel not only the Big Ten needs to head, but where collegiate athletics is headed, more of a business type model. And the other interesting dynamic at play here is that everybody thought Jim Phillips was going to get the job as Big Ten commissioner. He was the quote shoo-in candidate because he was the guy who had all of this experience in the collegiate ranks. But that's not the direction conferences are going right now in terms of the hires that they're making. And you can look at Kevin Warren specifically as somebody who's outside the typical mold. His background in the NFL coming from the Minnesota Vikings, I think, is going to be hugely important when we talk about where is college football specifically headed, because I think we all believe at some point it's going to look more like the NFL, right? Is it going to be exactly the NFL? Maybe not, but it's going to look more like the NFL than what it looked like maybe 50 years ago. And so again, this is why what Kevin Warren brings to the table is so important, because he's been there, he's done that, he understands it. And so trying to meld those two things together as we move forward in this landscape, I think positions the Big Ten really well and positions them maybe even better than the SEC, depending on where things shake out.
Before we move on, there are a couple things going on at ESPN that we want to mention. First, ESPN, in partnership with Peyton Manning's Omaha Productions, present Always College Football with ESPN college football analyst Greg McElroy. With off-seasons being a thing of the past, Greg McElroy goes year-round with analysis, opinions, and insight on top teams and under-the-radar stories from coast to coast. That's Always College Football. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. And he was the face of the New York Yankees and the most admired player in baseball. The Captain tells the story of Derek Jeter's life and Hall of Fame career. Catch Episode 3 on Thursday, July 28th, at 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN and streaming on ESPN Plus. I want to get into the Big Ten SEC relationship, because it was something that Greg Schiano, head coach at Rutgers, was very blunt about in celebrating the additions of UCLA and USC. You told us on Wednesday, it's important that we go blow for blow with the SEC. They had obviously added Texas and Oklahoma last summer. The Big Ten's response was not to add teams immediately. It was instead to enter an alliance with the ACC and the Pac-12 that many people mocked and continue to mock. But from a Big Ten perspective, it was, why are you joining forces with those two leagues? Because you're in just a different position, let's face it, than those leagues going forward. But now the Big Ten has answered with these two additions. So I want to get into the Warren Sankey dynamic going forward in the SEC. But I think what you said about Kevin's NFL business background is going to be relevant. Certainly if college football becomes more like an NFL structure, a Super League structure, because many people are wondering, including some of the coaches I spoke to this week in Indianapolis, who is going to oversee this? We can all talk about how it's going to happen, but how is it run? And who are the people that are trusted to oversee it? Is it the Big Ten and SEC commissioner? That's kind of tough because they obviously have their ties to their conferences, but it could be people that have more of a view beyond the college sports scene. I did think it was interesting. You know, I was asking Kevin Warren about, you know, what they had done and how it affects other conferences, namely the Pac-12, you know, putting them on the brink or however you want to phrase their current position. It's certainly not as strong as it was a month or two ago. And he said, you know, I come out of the NFL for 21 years. In the NFL, either you succeed or you fail. That's not only on the field. I'm talking about in business, operationally, either you have your fan base or you don't. That's a pretty blunt comment, Andrea. He wasn't directing that towards any league. He said he doesn't want any league to shut down, but it's a very kind of, this is how it is, you know, type deal. And this is where my experience comes from. And while I may have come into this role wanting to create alliances and work in this new landscape that I didn't fully understand until I was in it, I'm going to now put my expertise from the NFL business world forward because that's where we're all headed.
The bluntness in those comments, I think, speaks to why he has positioned the Big Ten where it is. There's no such thing as being nice and collegial anymore. I think we have learned that over the last couple of seasons, starting with COVID, quite frankly, when it seemed everyone was on the same page about what they were going to do. And we heard all about collegiality and then they weren't on the same page. And then they were going to be on the same page about the playoff and they weren't on the same page. And then the SEC did what they did to get Texas and Oklahoma. Now the Big Ten is doing what they need to do. While some of the other conferences who believe in these grandiose visions of what collegiate athletics needs to be or just kind of wondering, wait, what about us? Hang on. You know, Jim Phillips talked about being left out of gated communities, and Kevin Warren is bluntly talking about what it means to be in collegiate athletics right now. And in terms of what it's going to look like, who's going to oversee it? We've heard for years and years, there needs to be a commissioner overseeing college football. And I think eventually there's going to have to be one, right? There's going to have to be somebody who's not affiliated with any conference who can sit here and make decisions that are objective rather than with a conference bias or a team bias in mind. I think we all agree that at least the Power Five or whatever that looks like right now should be under a separate umbrella. Not the NCAA umbrella, but maybe should just be under the CFP. And then there needs to be somebody overseeing that for there to at least be some type of cohesion, because I don't think collegiality with the commissioners is going to exist the way that it once did.
It's not. And the quote today from AAC Commissioner Mike Oresko, as they had their media days, virtual media days, I think resonates. He said, trust is shattered routinely when it comes to realignment. So, you know, who do you trust? You know, I think one thing that's so fascinating this week, because the Big Ten had its media days Tuesday, Wednesday, the Pac-12 has its media day later this week in Los Angeles, is what happens to the Kevin Warren, George Kliavkov relationship, because these two were very, very close. I finally found the picture I've been looking for. George Kliavkov had tweeted out almost a year ago, Andrea, of he and Kevin in an embrace at the Rose Bowl meetings. And that was a few days, honestly, before the alliance between the Pac-12, Big Ten, and ACC was formally announced. And, you know, I think that they traveled together two games in September when Big Ten and Pac-12 teams were playing in the Big Ten footprint. You know, they were both new, they were both outsiders, you know, probably had their skeptics that they were dealing with. So there was a closeness there that, you know, seemingly has completely gone away after this move by the Big Ten. And, you know, they haven't spoken. Apparently they're going to speak after the Pac-12 media day, but you know, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 have been incredibly close for decades and decades. The Rose Bowl, I think the presidential groups feel aligned as far as their missions of their schools. But this is a big one, Andrew. This is kind of what a number of people, people around the Big Ten kept using the phrase collateral damage after the UCLA and USC moves. And so just getting quickly to the Pac-12 before we get back to the Big Ten, what do you think we hear from George Kliavkov about what happened and his relationship with Kevin Warren? Because they're going to have to work together, just like Bob Bowlesby, at least for a few months, had to work with Greg Sankey before he could hit the road. And that will certainly be the case for Brett Yormark, the new Big 12 commissioner.
Of those alliance commissioners you just mentioned, George Kliavkov had been the one who had been blunt, who had been bold, who had made big proclamations. He also came in with a business background to get the Pac-12 in a position with its next television contract, believing, okay, we need to get out of whoever been the collegiate administrator and be a little bit more bold and aggressive with our strategy. That clearly has not worked for the Pac-12 because of what the Big Ten just did. So I'm not sure what George Kliavkov can say beyond trading some sort of insults with Kevin Warren in the Big Ten to convey his feelings and his frustration with what just happened. I know inside the ACC, there were feelings that Kevin Warren was dealing with them, you know, with his fingers crossed behind their back. It probably feels more like a knife in the back of the Pac-12 because they're the conference that just got raided. But what is George Kliavkov going to gain by going after the Big Ten right now? He has to focus more on, is there any way to save the Pac-12, because as we have heard from Indianapolis, Big Ten may or may not be done. And if the Big Ten is not done, eventually at some point, wouldn't it make more sense to look at, beyond Notre Dame, of course, schools in the Pac-12 to pair up with USC and UCLA to ease some of the travel concerns? So my question for the Pac-12 and for George Kliavkov is there anything that can be done to save this conference? Because the next time the SEC or the Big Ten decides, you know what, it's time, we are ready, the Pac-12 and those schools on the West Coast feel like the ones that would make a ton of sense to go after, no matter what a new television contract looks like, no matter whether there's some sort of pact with the Big 12 or with the ACC. I just don't know what the long-term future looks like for the Pac-12 at this point. And how can George Kliavkov even answer that question?
Well, he's going to have to answer questions. And that's going to be fascinating to see what he does say. And what's so interesting about this, Andrea, is that in early May, when I sat down with George Kliavkov in Arizona, he was optimistic about a number of things. He talked about rooting for the Big Ten's television deal, because he believes, and I think he still believes, that live rights in college athletics are severely undervalued. And he knew the Big Ten was set to cash in and would help everybody else who would then follow, Pac-12 and Big 12 being the two that are up next. The problem is that Big Ten TV deal is going to be even better now with USC and UCLA, and the Pac-12's deal won't be as strong. But I would imagine that I'm going to predict that he's going to still, at least present as optimistic a tone as possible about what, you know, the Pac-12 can do with its media contract, because the Pac-12 has opened up its negotiations about a half a year earlier than it intended to after these departures. And the goal of that is to show the remaining members, we're going to be okay. This is our path forward. It's not going to be what you could get in the Big Ten. We all know that, but we can be strong enough sticking together, and we have more value than people think we do in the marketplace. So I do wonder how much of George's comments in LA will be about the Big Ten or UCLA and USC versus here's where I see us going with the Pac-12. We have an opportunity. The live rights are still undervalued. You're going to see that with the Big Ten deal, but you also can see that in a Pac-12 agreement to keep those teams as happy as possible. But you and I both know if there's an opportunity that the Big Ten extends to Oregon or Washington or Stanford or Cal, you know, they'd be irresponsible not to take it or at least significantly listen to it because the money is so much bigger on the Big Ten side.
No question about that. And I think that's what puts him in a no-win situation, right? I mean, no matter what he says, he's probably going to get criticized either for being too optimistic or not being optimistic enough or not hitting the right note. We'll see what he says. Obviously, we're sitting here trying to predict what direction he's going to go. But I get asked all the time about what's the long-term survivability of the ACC and what's the long-term survivability of the Pac-12. And there's a reason folks inside the ACC feel a little bit better about their standing, at least right now, because of the grant of rights that they have through 2036. It just feels like because the Big Ten only went after two schools on the West Coast, that the next time there's a domino that falls, if it does not involve Notre Dame, it would be schools that are on the West Coast to help provide some relief for travel for USC and UCLA. And that makes sense, right? So what can be done, if anything, from the Pac-12 perspective with this new contract to try and prevent that from even happening?
Well, I think the creativity of what's going on with that deal will be fascinating because the Pac-12 has always shared revenue equally, just like the Big Ten, just like the SEC has. But as the ACC is considering unequal revenue sharing, does the Pac-12 have to do the same to try to make Oregon and Washington happy enough to stay, maybe Stanford? How does that affect the remaining Pac-12 schools who, you know, may have an opportunity, likely would have an opportunity to go to the Big 12 and be in an even more revenue sharing model? So that's one opportunity. But I also just wonder, is there an outlet or a package of media partners that are strong enough to at least hold the league together for now? Because again, the Big Ten doesn't have to add anymore. You know, as people around that conference were telling me this week, every mouth you bring in, you have to feed, and that mouth has to hold up. And simply being located on the West Coast is not, you know, maybe enough to justify adding you and everything that goes along with adding a school to a conference. And so, you know, Stanford came up. Stanford's a great overall athletic program. It's one of the best schools in the world. It would make the Big Ten presidents very happy. They don't have much of the market. They don't have much of a football fan base. There are some drawbacks to Stanford, although it could be an inducement for Notre Dame. We could talk about realignment possibilities the entire podcast, but I do want to bring up another bit of news that emerged at Big Ten Media Day. And it's not necessarily shocking because all sorts of playoff models are on the table, but it does appear, Andrea, that the 16-team playoff model has some momentum. Ohio State Athletic Director Gene Smith talked about it. You know, Kevin Warren told me directly that you know, it's more heavily on his radar now than maybe ever. And while there's a lot of things to get through before they get back to the table as commissioners or whoever's deciding the expanded playoff, it does seem like 16 teams versus 12 teams with, you know, four true rounds, maybe two rounds on campus, that has some momentum right now. That has some juice. So what do you think about that? Is that a solution that could work well for everyone? Would it be detrimental? How do you see the 16 team playoff model going from where do you see it going from here?
I have always been a proponent of an expanded playoff. 16 teams seems absurd right now, considering what it would do again to the length of the season, because they're not going to be cutting out any games. They're not going to be cutting out a conference championship game. These are all moneymakers for schools. They're not going to decrease. So now what are we talking about? An 18 game schedule potentially for a team? 17 games? What is this? Oh my gosh, it's an NFL model, except players aren't getting paid right now. Sure, they might be getting paid NIL money, but that's a very small percentage of all college football players. So in my opinion, if there is going to be any thought of a 16-team playoff, players are going to have to get paid in some regard. And I think eventually we're going to get there in the collegiate landscape. If we've seen with some of the court cases that are pending and athletic directors that you and I have both talked to believe at some point that's where we're going to be headed. But for right now, with where the sport is, I don't understand how you're going to ask college athletes to play 17 or 18 games so that conferences can line their pocketbooks with more and more money and not give that back to the players.
Absolutely. And I was surprised, and my colleagues, Tom Van Herren, Chris Lowe, we also talked about this in our interviews, that there's more openness than ever, even among coaches, for revenue sharing with the players. I think especially once this Big Ten media agreement is announced in August, and I think it'll be announced by August 15th at the latest, you're going to have a huge number that again, people are going to wonder how much of that cut should go to the guys on the field. And so I think we're trending in that direction, and it all, again, could get closer to this, you know, true NFL model, expanded playoff, major media rights deals for the Big Ten. The SECs will come up eventually, and they're bound to cash in even more than they do right now. So it's definitely something. The attitudes have just changed so much, if you think about it, from, you know, 3-4, certainly like 5 or 6 years ago, to where it's headed right now. I think there's an acceptance that this is the only path forward, or you're going to be in courtrooms and you're probably going to be losing, as we found out with the NCAA in recent years. I did want to get to a few of the teams in the Big Ten and the coaches and some of the things that were said in Indianapolis. You heard from Ohio State and C.J. Stroud, who's one of the leading Heisman Trophy favorites this year, along with his top wide receiver, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, visited with them on Wednesday. And, you know, you hear this a lot, Andrea, from teams that aspire to compete for national championships. And my tendency is to sort of roll my eyes, but they talked a lot about, we haven't accomplished anything. We need more accountability. We need to be hungrier. You know, Jaxon Smith-Njigba said, I feel we haven't won anything, and we want to get to week 15, which is obviously the national championship. We're thinking about that every day in workouts and practice. And Coach Ryan Day, you know, said some of the same things. You know, we have seen examples of teams like Ohio State that haven't reached their goal that do the following year get to a national championship and win a national championship. I was struck, though, by how determined and how blunt C.J. Stroud was about, hey, I haven't accomplished anything, but I want to be a legend. I want to be one of the best who ever played here. I think his voice could be important. I am cynical about this, though, when I hear this from really good teams. Of course, you're hungry. Everybody's hungry. Everybody is motivated. What's going to make the difference in getting you over the hump? And do you think Ohio State can do that?
You know, Adam, as I got our preseason power ranking poll ballot to fill out, in my mind, I've always had Alabama one because they have Bryce Young coming back and Will Anderson coming back and a lot of talent, obviously, like Alabama always does. But as I was reading the stories from Ohio State this week at Big Ten, and I'm looking at who they have coming back, specifically on offense, I started to think to myself, should I put Ohio State number one? Because based on talent alone on the offense, now the defense has a ton to prove. Best receiver core in the country, obviously terrific running back, and one of the best, if not the best, quarterbacks in the country. So everything is lined up for Ohio State. I love the hire of Jim Knowles as defensive coordinator. I covered him at Duke. And honestly, Duke football, specifically Duke's defense, fell off a cliff after Jim Knowles left. And so I think that just, again, on a much smaller scale, speaks to what I think he can bring to the table for Ohio State defensively, which is absolutely what that team needs. But I understand when these teams that are ranked top four say this, because in covering teams that have been elite and then maybe slip up a little bit, the thing you always hear is we took winning for granted, or we took off-season workouts for granted, or we just thought it was going to be easy, or we just thought because of the helmet and the name on our chest, we were just going to go out there and win. So maybe last season was a turning point for Ohio State's players to show, hey, okay, yeah, it's going to take a lot more work than what we've put in. Like, we've reached a certain level, but that certain level is not going to be good enough at Ohio State when you want to win national championships. And it's been a while since they've won national championships, right? At least from their perspective, in their history, as we've seen what Alabama and Georgia and Clemson have done over the last several years. So I know it sounds cliched, and I know every team is hungry and everyone's worked really hard and built up their chemistry and we're in a good place and everyone's bought in. Every player, I think, at every media day has said some combination of all those words. But at a program like Ohio State, you just have to take it to another level. And honestly, you know, Dabo Swinney and Clemson talked about this last season. They've slipped up a little bit. They didn't make the playoff. And they felt like they had taken winning for granted a little bit. Now they've won 10 straight for 10 games for 11 straight years, and yet doesn't feel good enough anymore. So what are you going to do in the offseason, in the workout room, on your 7-on-7s to get yourself back to where you were? And I think that's where a lot of that stuff is coming from Ohio State. And I'm still debating who to put number one, Adam. I'm not going to lie.
No, it's a good debate. And it's interesting that neither of us, and I'm having the same debate, although I did put in my number one. I won't reveal it yet. I don't want to influence your decision, but it came down to two teams that didn't win the national championship last year. We know Georgia was not my number one. They were my number three. They'll maybe your number three, but it's interesting that we're talking about those two teams instead of the defending national champion, which, by the way, returns their starting quarterback and some really good players. The thing, and you brought up Jim Knowles, and our colleague Heather Dinich had a really nice piece on Jim and his impact at Ohio State. I think he is by far the most significant assistant coach hire in college football this season, because I'm sitting there and I believe Jackson Smith and Jigba and CJ Stroud when they're telling me we haven't done anything, we have something to prove. I'm also sitting there saying Jackson Smith and Jigba had 347 receiving yards and three touchdowns against Utah in the Rose Bowl. CJ Stroud threw for like 900 yards in that game. If they play better defense, they're going to be in the playoff. If they play better defense, they're going to be in the national championship game. Their defense has been mediocre to terrible in three of the last four seasons at Ohio State, a place that has tremendous tradition. I mean, their tradition on defense blows their tradition at quarterback out of the water. And so that's why if they can just get to a respectable, maybe slightly above respectable level on defense, and they stay healthy on, because that should be the best offense in the country. And talking to Ronnie Hickman, their safety, about practicing against them, and to Ryan Day about the value of that defense practicing against them, it is set up for Ohio State. Because if I just showed you a blank resume of a team and showed you what they've done in the last 20 to 25 years, wins and losses, and I asked you how many national championships they would have won, you would have said 4 to 5. And the answer with Ohio State is 2. They don't win the national championship enough. And that's why I think this season, anything less than a national championship, especially with that quarterback receiver combination, is going to be a significant disappointment. And so, yes, find your motivation. Everyone has to do it. You have to do it. I have to do it. Taylor and Sarah have to do it in producing us on this podcast. But Ohio State could just also play better defense and probably get where they need to go.
Adam, I feel like you've convinced me now about who I should put number one, and it's not the team from the SEC. I don't know. It's a good debate to have, and it's fun to have these types of debates headed into the season. But without question, I think it's going to be Ohio State, Alabama, in whatever order, 1-2. They are the clear top two teams in the country going into the season. No offense to Georgia, because I love what Stetson Bennett brings to the table. They lost a lot of players from that team a year ago. And I know they're at a point where they, you know, reload and they don't rebuild. But in terms of the depth of what Alabama and Ohio State have, to me, it's those two teams and everybody else right now.
It is. And, you know, again, Ohio State didn't win its conference. Alabama, you know, won its conference in somewhat surprising fashion against Georgia, which had been undefeated going into the SEC championship game. And yet, yeah, we're not talking as much about Georgia and we're not talking as much about Michigan, but Michigan was talking this week. We heard from Jim Harbaugh. We heard from some of the players in Indianapolis and, you know, just a very different feeling around that program from what we've seen, because as Jim was telling us the other day, you know, they have reference points now. They don't have to talk about what it'll feel like when they beat Ohio State or what it'll feel like when they win the Big Ten or go to the college football playoff. They can now, you know, remember that very recently. But you look at their team and they lose some outstanding players on defense. I think if David Ojabo doesn't rupture his Achilles in pre-draft training at Michigan and at Pro Day, they have three number one draft picks off their defense. Obviously, Aiden Hutchinson and Daxton Hill in the secondary were both number one picks. So some rebuilding there, although Jim Harbaugh was very optimistic about Jesse Minter, the new defensive coordinator. You're saying that, you know, before when they decided to part ways with Don Brown, he had asked his brother, Baltimore Ravens coach John Harbaugh, who he should hire. And he brought up two names, Mike McDonald and Jesse Minter, and said, you could pick. They're both really good. He obviously hired Mike McDonald, who did such a good job that John Harbaugh hired him back with the Ravens this year as their defensive coordinator. And so Jim Harbaugh hires Jesse Minter. So that's kind of an interesting dynamic as they try to maintain continuity after losing some really good players on defense. What do you think we should expect from Michigan, which has maybe the easiest opening for any major, you know, championship contender in college football? They will not be tested much until, you know, late September, early October, when Big Ten play begins. What do we expect from this Wolverines team that, by the way, won the Big Ten last year?
You talk about motivation. I should hope that semifinal performance against Georgia gave Michigan all the motivation they needed in the offseason. I was at that game. My family was at that game. Full disclosure, my husband's from Ann Arbor. His parents were professors there. My kids love Michigan because daddy takes them to watch Michigan on Saturdays while I'm traveling the country going to games. And so they're sitting up there in the stands crying because of what is unfolding in front of them. So if any team needs, okay, where do we need to go? What is our measuring stick? Maybe it's not Ohio State. Maybe it's what's happening in the SEC. Michigan has to get to that level. And I don't necessarily know that in 1 year, with all the losses that they've had on that defense, that they're going to get there. And the other question is, what's going to happen on offense? Because it sounds as if there may be an open quarterback competition with Cade McNamara and JJ McCarthy, who Jim Harbaugh loves. And I know Jim Harbaugh said that, yeah, Cade's going to be the starter and take the first snap at practice, but then we'll see what happens. So that dynamic and how to use both of those guys, because I thought Cade did a wonderful job last year leading the offense. JJ is the more dynamic player, but he had some crucial mistakes and crucial moments a year ago. So what is that going to look like? What does Ronnie Bell look like coming off of the knee injury when he looked like he was about to have such a promising season a year ago? So there are so many more questions about Michigan headed into this season than there are about Ohio State because of who Ohio State is bringing back. And they've got motivation themselves because they got embarrassed by Michigan. I feel as if Michigan might just be a step below or behind where they were a season ago.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. And again, you know, that was the one season that they took a major step, but they did so with some exceptional players. And while Jim Harbaugh was going through the list of guys that he thinks have the potential to be stars this year, he needs a lot of those guys to come through, especially on defense, because they have to go to Ohio State. And that's going to be, you know, a game that you could have two undefeated teams. You could have one loss team that if they win that game, they're going to win the East Division and get to the Big Ten championship game. We do still have divisions in the Big Ten this year. So, but it is a fascinating situation at quarterback because Cade McNamara was there. You don't bring your quarterback to media day unless he's your day one starter. So JJ McCarthy, who really didn't do much throwing, hasn't done much throwing, but is supposed to start in preseason camp, he's going to have to go out there and show that he deserves more than just kind of gimmicky series here, series there, like they used him last year. But I think the early season games, because Michigan should win all those fairly easily, will present an opportunity for McCarthy to get into games, and then we'll see how he's used against Maryland, against Iowa, and then certainly as they get into the meat of their Big Ten schedule with Michigan State and certainly Ohio State at the end of the year. A couple other interesting things, Andrea, just from Indy. I think Scott Frost, and he was adamant that his team is close after so many close losses last year. Felt that the sky wasn't falling. Felt that everything was able to be addressed. I kept pressing him a little bit on, well, what if you see something in practice that reminds you of what led to all of those losses? And he answered, I thought, in a fair way. He said, listen, it was something different in every loss. It was special teams here. It was a penalty here. It was missed assignment here. It was these three plays in this game, which just didn't resemble those three games in the other game. I do think there's something cultural, though, with Nebraska. And you know Scott Frost well. You witnessed his incredible success at UCF. It's very clear he has to win probably 7-8 games to keep his job at the minimum at Nebraska this year, but feels that he'll have the team that can turn those so many close, agonizing losses into wins.
The question, of course, is why? Why does he feel this team is ready to turn a corner when it's not just one thing? It's a lot of things, right? Which would seem to indicate, well, you're not fixing those things in practice. That would be the place to fix the mistakes that keep cropping up. And if there are a ton of mistakes that are cropping up, then you've got to take a more holistic view of what you're doing in practice. Now, obviously, they've revamped essentially their entire coaching staff, almost their entire coaching staff, for good reason. But at the same time, is Mark Whipple going to be the answer coming over from Pitt? I don't know the answer to that, especially because Nebraska likes to run the ball and Pitt really didn't run the ball a year ago, as Pat Narduzzi made some comments about that caught some attention last week about what Mark Whipple did in engineering that offense. Even though they had a Heisman Trophy candidate, he was very upset they didn't run the ball. Well, Nebraska's obviously going to want to run the ball. But to me, what happens in Ireland against Northwestern, I think, is going to speak a lot about whether this team has actually, in fact, changed and found a way to eliminate the mistakes that cost them in games. It's a huge opener to go overseas against a team that, generally speaking, I know last year maybe wasn't great for Northwestern, but generally speaking, is among the most disciplined teams in the country and finds ways to win games. That is a big game for Nebraska. And I honestly don't know how that game is going to play out for them, because I don't know that all the necessary changes that had to be made to get Nebraska to a point where they can win in the fourth quarter, which they've been unable to do, have been made.
Right. And again, there's a lot on the offensive side that's different. Scott Frost is the same. The defensive staff is mostly the same, but I think it's very hard to change who you are as a team once it's sort of baked in. And unfortunately for Nebraska, the mistakes are baked in. The fourth quarter problems are baked in. And while I agree with you that opener is important, Northwestern was the one team that actually put it all together against last year. I even if they win that game, how do they look against Oklahoma? How do they look, week to week in the Big Ten? They haven't beaten Wisconsin, in like 12 years. It's crazy. So it's a really interesting team. I thought Penn State too, another interesting team coming off of a couple of disappointing seasons. Dame Franklin, talking about how he feels like they finally have the right administrative support in place to move forward instead of, like, as he put it, reacting to what happened before he got there, the Jerry Sandusky situation, the scandal, everything that went on. He feels that with Pat Kraft as the new athletic director, they have a new president, that they can really start competing for championships. And that's an important statement, because he received the 10-year contract back in November. So he's going to start delivering. I do want to get a little away from the Big Ten and ask you about another big story late last week, something that was coming, but exactly when and how it presented itself, we didn't know. That was the Tennessee infraction situation as we now know more about what Jeremy Pruitt is alleged to have done. His wife was involved as well, making some cash payments. Seems like everybody in Knoxville, Andrea, was running around with McDonald's bags full of cash. And to me, it's just comical. I know this is a tough situation for Tennessee fans, but it's like these violations almost seem like, 20 years after, it's like a relic of the past. Like, this is the type of stuff that happened before NIL. This is the type of stuff that happened in the old Southwest Conference. It's like SMU type stuff. So it was more funny to me to just read the details about what happened to Tennessee, and then also to reflect on that coaching search, which being at Big Ten Media Days this week, I thought quite a lot about, because I'm sitting across from Greg Schiano late last afternoon on Wednesday, was the initial choice to be Tennessee's coach. Also saw Mel Tucker, who was one of the finalists when they hired Jeremy Pruitt, which obviously turned out to be a disaster.
Yeah, I wish Steve Spurrier had a microphone in front of him so he could launch into one joke after another. I'm not swift enough to sit here and start coming up with one-liners about the cheating, but seriously, was there no Cheating for Dummies book they could consult? I mean, these violations are so comical, as you said, and egregious. Like, really, you thought it'd be cool to just pay for McDonald's and mani-pedis and give money to mothers? And it boggles the mind that anybody thought they would be able to get away with this. Now, I think we all know and understand that there's some level of perhaps cheating going on at some places or others. But in terms of the way it was done here, I don't even know what Jeremy Pruitt was thinking. I would love to know what he was thinking, because he clearly was not thinking. Somebody pointed out, well, you know, it's the NIL era. Why should this matter? No, these are still NCAA violations in the NIL era. You still cannot pay people and use money as an inducement as a head coach and as a coach's wife to get someone to come to your school. So NIL, no NIL, still an NCAA violation. 18 level one, Adam. That's a lot.
You got to cheat better. I mean, yes. You know, you got to cheat better than this and be more sophisticated. It was comical. We'll see obviously what happens as far as the actual infractions. Tennessee's hopeful that with its dismissal of Jeremy Pruitt and some of the other self-imposed penalties, that it will come out of this on the other end. But certainly something that we'll continue to follow, and something that we are continuing to do as we lead up to the season is our ABCs of college football. And today's episode is brought to you by the letter U, which includes quite a lot of teams, Andrea. You know, there's obviously some famous ones on here. The two schools the Big Ten just added, USC and UCLA, are both U schools, as are UCF in your backyard, Utah and Utah State. You both won their conferences last year, respectively. UTSA, another notable U school that had a great season under Jeff Traylor. Of this group of U schools, who stands out most to you, or just intrigues you most entering the 2022 season?
There's only one U school. When you hear the letter U, which is the school that comes up? It's all about the U. That's right. We're throwing up the U right now. And look, all those schools are intriguing. I think UCF is intriguing. They were picked to finish third, I think, in the American. I think they're going to have a shot to win the American this year. Gus Malzahn feels really good about the team that he has coming back. Miami, though, and we've talked about this on the podcast.
That's the M show, Andrea, not okay. The U show.
This is the U, otherwise known as Miami, but we'll use the U right now. Really intriguing, and picked to win the Coastal Division in the ACC to make the ACC championship game in the final season of the Coastal. We'll pour one out for them at the end of the year. But certainly, yeah, the expectations are high for the U, with who they have coming back, with Mario Cristobal taking over as the head coach. And those Coastal predictions clearly indicate that the media, once again, for the sixth time, I believe, in history, believes very strongly that the U is going to win it, even though they've only won the Coastal once.
Yeah, it'll be one of the more interesting teams in the country, especially once they begin their year and they play Texas A&M in week three, one of the more intriguing games. Just going through this list, Utah just fascinates me. Can they repeat as Pac-12 champions, or will USC or maybe even UCLA make a push for them in the Pac-12 South? Utah traveling to Florida in week one, certainly a game that I'll be paying very close attention to.
I will be there.
You're going to be there. Great.
Yes.
Okay. That's a good one, because there are very few games that on that week one slate that interest me more than Utah traveling to Florida. I think Utah State also, Blake Anderson just did a fabulous job with that program, getting them to a Mountain West championship. And then I mentioned Jeff Traylor at UTSA, also UAB, Bill Clark, stepping down because of health issues. You know, can UAB continue the type of success that it has had now for a number of years? There's also some programs here. UConn with Jim Mora back on the sideline, that should be fun. UMass, Don Brown's return to UMass. UNLV, certainly a big year for Marcus Arroyo, needing to emerge there. And UTEP also, can't forget the Miners and Dana Dimmel. So that's a good list of U schools, and a good podcast today, Andrea. It was really fun breaking down the Big Ten and all the fallout from media days, looking ahead to the Pac-12, getting a little bit of Tennessee talk and playoff talk in there. The next podcast will be coming your way in the month of August, and that means actual college football is on the horizon. That makes us all very, very excited. So thanks for listening. This has been the ESPN College Football Podcast.
Seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.